Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another series of positional previews. I want to remind everybody that these are brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce and our longtime friends For the Table Restaurant Group. Bud, this is one of the favorite things that we do every year, something that I personally look forward to, and it's as good of an indicator that the season is soon to come as anything that's on my calendar.
Ingram, happy to be doing with you again, man. We're going to talk a little about what's going to happen this season. We're going to actually pull some audio maybe or some quotes from last year's positional previews to see what we got right and, importantly, what we got wrong, where we can improve and make some predictions.
Let's get into it. Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, return for another position preview series. And, Bud, this time let's shift our focus to the wide receivers. It's always interesting to do these, always a lot of fun to do these. If nothing else, it means that football season's right around the corner, but also we have something we've tried to incorporate into these position previews as a look back to what we thought and what we said in 2016, and if that was kind of indicative of some of the questions surrounding the season last year, it may be as true with this position group in particular. So a whole new slate of projected starters, a lot of you certainly feel comfortable with your starting three, but a lot of questions that surround the rest of the group.
You do, man. It's going to be an interesting year. Ingram, one thing we like to do in these position preview series, and we keep these shorter so that if you're just catching up on these, you're going to have a chance to listen to all six or seven of these before the season in the week leading up to FSU's first game. But we like to go back and review kind of what we said last year. So let's hit us with that kind of first general theme that we had.
This is from Sports Illustrated, August 10th, 2016. Quote, "They didn't have anybody that scared us last year at wideout. They were just good college receivers."
They've got a lot of solid Bs and a lot of B pluses in this unit, but not anybody that's developed to a place where you've really got a game plan for it.
Yeah, so the general theme that we had was that you had a lot of established targets, but nobody that scared you, nobody that made you game plan for, and that you didn't have a legit option. And if that wasn't, if that wasn't accurate sentiment, the anonymous coach or the hidden coach commentary from Sports Illustrated was basically the same thing. Coach said, nobody that we were particularly scared of, certainly some talented kids that we would take on our roster, but not that true dominant guy that really made you particularly game plan for in the week leading up to facing Florida State.
Absolutely. So I think that actually proved to be pretty true, right? At least for most of the season, you had guys who were pretty dependable, but not special. Edgar, how many guys off last year's receiver corps got drafted?
Zero.
In any round?
If I recall correctly, I know Travis was the one that fell that maybe had a couple eyebrows peaked, but unless I'm mistaken, that number's zero.
Yeah, and look, I'm not trying to disparage those guys. They were fine. But this is Florida State. You should be better than just fine. I mean, and this has been probably the consistently worst position on the roster under Jimbo Fisher. Two draft picks in 10 years with him as an offensive coordinator and with Lawrence Dossey as receivers coach. And look, we can blame Dossey all you want, but ultimately this falls on Jimbo for why they don't consistently have good receiver play. It's been the worst offensive position for a decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, significantly. I'll pause real briefly to give Rudolph credit that he very much looks like he's going to make the Giants roster and potentially be a meaningful contributor to him. But the facts that you just stated remain, and his season last year did not pair, really his career, unfortunately, did not pair with somebody from a production standpoint that could potentially challenge for playing time in the league immediately.
So I'm happy for him, too. I think that'll be good. The other thing we said, Ingram, was concerning fit. And basically what we said was this receiving core would work a lot better if you had a different type of quarterback. Who do we use? I know we use Tom Brady, which, hey, obviously, but I know we use another guy.
Chad Pennington was a little bit of a more obscure name that we referenced. Somebody that's comfortable with an offense, can make short throws, and perhaps more importantly, make anticipatory, accurate throws. And that, as of this point, is something that we were accurately concerned about if it was in the quarterback's game last year, and probably would still have some of those concerns that that hold over to 2017.
Right. So that receiving core could get open, but they didn't consistently make tough catches. I mean, Bobo probably was the guy that made the tough catches as far as the small dudes. They would run pretty decent routes for the most part, but you had to have a quarterback who was accurate, anticipatory, and could throw in a rhythm, and DeAndre Francois is none of those things so far in his career. I mean, maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't, but we know it didn't happen last year. Thus, you know, the 47% completions against the better teams where the windows are kind of small. This year, Ingram, all these things we said might change. It really might.
You got a different group of kids to throw to. At least when you look at your, you know, two of your first three, you've got a lot more room for error. You can have a wide receiver that, you know, puts a body on somebody. This particular skill set and this particular just the physical attributes of this wide receiver position, I think very much agree pairs with what you have at quarterback, and that's a. What I'm saying is that plays to Francois' strengths. I mean, he's got the arm strength. Doesn't have to be quite as pinpoint accurate with this group, and it may be somebody that allows your quarterback to play to his strengths at a level that maybe last year's core didn't.
I agree there. So we said, hey, they have some big guys. Maybe some stuff will happen with them. Let's review what we said last year about some of those big guys and what actually happened.
Yeah, man, this is painful. I mean, sometimes we get stuff right. Certainly, when you talk about this team as much as you and I have over the past 8 years or so, you're not going to bat 1,000, and I don't think we have any false ideas that we have. But we had a conversation about Auden Tate a couple weeks ago, or a couple weeks before the wide receiver preview, where we talked about what would be a successful season, and I think we just about nailed that one. I think we set the over-under at 4.5, and I said I thought he'd have 6 touchdowns and maybe 28 receptions or maybe 31 receptions. You know, I think he had 25 and 6 last year. So we might have been individually accurate, but as a group, both of us, and I more than you on this one, completely had a swing and a miss. So the question that we asked was, how many catches would wide receivers that are north of 6'2" have? And by that 6'2" group, we met Gavin, Lane, Tate, Campbell, and Javon Harrison. In 2015, they had 15 receptions. Bud, you thought that number could get up to around 80. I, maybe in a moment of unexplained
insanity,
optimism, had 110. Bud, as we just said, Auden Tate caught 25 balls.
Did we include tight ends in this?
We did not. No, we specifically didn't. Auden Tate caught 25 balls.
Anybody else catch a ball? What about
Pig Harrison caught a ball.
Okay. So we're at 26?
And 26. And nothing from Gavin, nothing from Lane, nothing from Campbell. The last time George Campbell caught a ball was Texas State 2015. And that is, when you consider that was the opener, that's a depressing reminder of some of the frustrations that have surrounded that kid's career.
That's man, that's sad.
You ever have a teacher tell you zeros don't average well? That's a reminder to that. When three of them put up goose eggs, and now there's different reasons behind that. Harrison left the team. Ermon Lane changed positions. George Campbell never got to play, but nonetheless, for what we hoped would be at least north of 50, you had one guy catch 25, and other than that, the production out of that group of five was little to nothing.
So you had a bunch of midgets with a quarterback who wasn't really fit to throw to them, and thus your production against some of the better teams is partially explained. So we were hopeful on Campbell. Mentioned that every team was, you know, FSU plays is aware of his physical ability because they know how he was as a recruit. But injuries were a concern entering the year, and that proved to be really true, Ingram. He stayed injured. Ermon Lane, yep. We mentioned that he was on a short leash, you know, 32% catch rate in 2015, only 2.6 yards per attempt at him. He never got developed by this coaching staff. Keith Gavin, we said that he looked like Des Bryant, you know, body of the NFL body kind of as a freshman, and they got to figure out a way to get him on the field. He did battle some injuries, but overall, I don't think they did a good enough job of you know, finding the way to get him on the field and use his talents. That's not new under Jimbo Fisher's system. He seems to just stick with guys who know the system, even if there are dudes with a lot better physical ability on the bench. Devontae Phillips had two groin injuries, and we said his ceiling was limited to perhaps maybe a dependable number two. And as you know, Phillips is, as of this recording, still suspended on 5 felony counts for money order fraud. Not the brightest tool in the shed there. And Javon Harrison, you know, obviously we weren't sure what was going to happen with him. He left the team, like I said. Nyquan Murray was another guy we weren't sure about. He had really been wowing people in the 7-on-7 skeleton work. You know, he said he was physical, labeled him as a likely future starter, but weren't sure it'd be that year. That one I feel like we got right, because he was a starter by the end of the year, but not in the beginning of the year. It says something to me that almost all these guys we just read off, almost only a couple of them are actually expected to do anything this year. And I think that speaks right to, A, other guys emerging, and B, the relative lack of depth on this receiving core. I mean, this is a top-heavy receiving core.
It's concerning. I mean, I know when we talked 2 weeks ago, we mentioned that a walk-on at this point was your number four. I'm not sure that's really changed as from what I've heard from people. I know that he's I don't know. It's just frustrating when you look at your front three or your first three, and then how many questions surround everybody else. You got a lot of talent, and you have kids that you think are probably going to earn a paycheck at some degree. Certainly, Keith Gavin could be a 10-year pro, but real concerns about how much the fall off and what it's actually would be when you either go to a four receiver set. Or, you know, knock on wood, if you were to face some type of injury situation throughout the course of the season.
I don't know what to make of the entirety of this group, but I do like the trio, right? Let's jump into that. Your number one guy, the guy that FSU wants to be its number one guy, is Nyquan Murray, at least at this point. Like, the guy who is supposed to be your dependable, you know, number one type. Now, he's not the biggest dude in the world. Let's see what FSU lists him at here. I'm looking this up. I've got a general idea, but you know, we'll see exactly what they say. By the way, Nyquan, like 5'11", last year they had 175, him 180.
I think they had him 5'10", 179 last year, if I remember.
So here's the deal with Nyquan Murray. A lot of ability, man. A lot of ability. Now, is he going to play consistently? Is he going to play like they need him to play? Because that's the question. When he's on, he's about as good as anybody on this roster receiver-wise. But he's now what? Is he a true junior, I'm thinking? Yeah. They need him to come to practice consistently. Jimbo Fisher should not still be having to yell at him for taking plays off, which he does a lot. If this is going to be his money year, like some people around the program think he's looking to jump to the NFL after this year, he's got to really prove that he can be a down-in, down-out player. Because those NFL teams don't just watch highlights. They also watch you take plays off. And if you're Dez Bryant, you know, you can get away with that. If you're Nyquan Murray, you might be Florida State's best receiver. Might be. But you will not be an NFL team's best receiver. And they're going to look at that and say, that's a habit that's going to be hard to break a kid of, especially if he's in his third year in FSU's program. He's got to get that together. But, man, when he plays when he wants to, you saw him moss the best corner in the Big Ten last year against Michigan to win the Orange Bowl. He's a guy that will make tough physical catches. When he wants to, he runs really good routes. When he wants to, he can turn on the jets. He has great agility, great acceleration. I'm a big fan of Nyquan Murray's skills. At this point, there's not a whole lot of reason to be a big fan of believing Murray is going to play hard down and down out until he shows it. It's a show me type thing. But I love the ability.
I think I don't think anybody questions Nyquan's ability. I mean, it was something that we noted a couple months ago. He had at least, I think at least four plays specifically drawn, or at least it appeared, I should say, very much appeared as though he had three or four shot plays designed for him in the Ole Miss game, which lets you know they knew the type of talent they had, and they wanted to specifically try to incorporate him into the game plan. Now, the exodus that occurred as far as him and his involvement in the offense for another six or seven games is concerning, but I think Naquan is a kid that consistency may just be an issue for throughout his time here, which is kind of scary if you consider him to be one of your three known quantities and one of the guys that's going to consume the vast majority of your snaps. But we'll have to see how much he takes a step up in just a consistent approach to the game and how much of a kind of a professional approach he has to this year. It could very much be a year that he makes himself some money, and it could be a year where we are all very frustrated that we don't necessarily see the potential that's possible there. So I think this could go one of two ways.
I have a proposal. What if Murray agrees to take off plays only in, like, the less important games, right? Can we get 100% right, yes, effort in the Big Six? And the Big Six to me are Bama, Miami, NC State, Louisville, Clemson, and Florida. If he gives us, 400 hard plays in those games, right? That's only taking like two or three off per game. Then I don't really give a damn what he does in the other six. And here's this is why I think it's so important, Ingram. Last year, catches. Travis Rudolph, 56. Naquan, 27. So more than double for Travis. Yards, 840 to 440. So almost double in the yards. Touchdowns, about the same, 7 to 5. Still, advantage Rudolph. But let's control this for a little bit. You know how we had said Rudolph had a habit of disappearing in big games?
Yes.
Murray's kind of the opposite. Check this out. Games against ranked teams last year. Catches. Rudolph, 13. Murray, you want to take a guess?
17.
10. So Okay. Almost the
same. Again, some more wide receiver optimism that runs through my veins there.
All right. Yeah. Yards. 213 for Rudolph. 212 for Murray. Touchdowns.
Okay.
One for Rudolph, three for Murray.
So let me ask a question there, bud. Do you think that is a indication of a kid stepping his game up against the toughest talent, or do you think it might be an indication of Jimbo Fisher having to swallow his pride and realize that he can't hold bullshit over a kid's head when he's playing the best teams and he needs his best players to be involved?
Maybe some of both. Maybe it's also a frustration, you know, of how long it took for him to develop and how he, you know, through the first part of the year, through the first seven games, Naquan Murray had 46 total yards. He finished with 441. So, you know, 395 of his yards came in the final six games of the season.
That's a good, that's certainly the trajectory and trend that you would hope for out of a kid that's poised for a real big breakout money type year. So, some optimism with Naquan, most certainly, and a guy that if he brings it to practice and he brings it to the games is probably one of the three better wide receivers in this league. So, lot to look for and a lot to be optimistic about, but not something that I can, I guess, fully emotionally invest in and know that that's going to be a consistent product at this
Agreed.
Point in time.
Next guy would be Auden Tate, who I think is going to play a lot. I've heard he's been playing well in the scrimmages, has been catching the ball a whole lot. They're force-feeding it to him. Big dude. 6'5", 6'5½", 200-plus, big physical presence, big strike zone for DeAndre Francois to throw the ball to. We're going a little bit quicker now because these are not supposed to last, 45 minutes for a single position. So, look, the question was, can he bend? Can he get in and out of his breaks enough to run enough variety of routes where defensive backs have to respect him? I'm actually hearing that he's been making some progress in that area. And I don't know if he's necessarily a physical freak, but if he can be a dependable, bigger target, that's a valuable thing to have in this receiving corps. They need to keep him healthy. He's a junior now, and I think he's going to be a decent player for them, assuming he stays healthy.
Absolutely. A guy last year that we talked about brought the dynamic of being able to catch, contested balls. I think Tate may have the biggest year of the three here from a statistical standpoint. I think he's poised to do big things. I think he has a pretty good rapport with Francois. And I think if I was playing like college fantasy football, I think Auden Tate may be an incredible value for where you can get
him. I agree. Next is the guy that I'm really excited to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the NFL player that's running around in college. So, when I say I'm excited about Tate, I just think that he may have a little bit more production. I mean, we talked about this last year. Keith Gavin, he looks like an NFL player. He looked like an NFL player when you're recruiting him as a senior out of Wakulla there. I mean, he's an absolute freak, and he's as big of a an upside or talent as is on the roster.
What defines a freak? You know, really what it is, man, is it's a guy who's a lot faster than he should be for his size, who combines that with body control. Damn, but that doesn't describe Keith Gavin. I mean, he's 6'3", probably what, 220? You said like Dez Bryant, he's kind of built like him. And the stuff that I've heard from practice and in scrimmages jives very much with what I heard from high school, and that's the quickness and the long speed that he has for his size is just, you don't expect it from a guy that big. And that's really what makes future NFL stars. Now, can he run routes? I think he has the ability to. Does he have the knowledge to do it? Does he have enough reps in the system to do it where he can consistently be dependable? I'm not sure. But I am sure that they've got to find a way to force feed him the ball. Gavin is a mismatch. If he has single coverage against a lot of corners in this league, he has the advantage, and you need to throw him the football. Get him reps, get him involved in the game, get his confidence up. What I don't want to see is you know, stat line at the end of the year where it's like, oh, he had 30 catches, and he had some nice plays, but they really didn't make use of him. And then he blows up in his junior year and goes to the NFL, and you're like, man, remember when we got one good year out of Keith Gavin? You know, no. Use that talent on your team. Yeah. Find a way. Be creative. Be simple if you have to. Get him the football. I want the ball in that guy's hands. And I think he's making progress. So I'm very encouraged by this trio. In fact, I don't want to sound like a crazy person here, but just on pure physical ability and potential, I think this trio of receivers has better potential than any in the ACC.
More than Clemson's group included. Yeah, that's a strong statement.
I mean, look, they've got the best guy in Deion Cain. But they also lost Mike Williams. They also lost, Tate Scott.
Yeah. They also just have a little freaking wide receiver factory up there for the past five years.
True.
Just keeps spitting kids out. But you're right.
Who did they return? Okay, so they got Deion Cain back. They got Hunter Renfrow, the walk-on. Travion Thompson. Mm-hmm. Look, Clemson's going to be damn good at receiver. Again, there's no doubt. I don't want to take that away from him. But I like this trio for Florida State. Assuming that they find a way to use them correctly, because ability-wise, this is the best set of abilities since 2013.
I'm fine saying that. I think, you haven't had a kid with Sunday level potential on a roster in a while. I mean, it's you have to go back to 2013. Gavin is just a different element, and when you combine that with what I think you're going to get from a consistency standpoint of Tate. And just a playmaking ability from Nyquan Murray. You've got a ton of things here and a great little cocktail of reasons to be excited with what you could get out of the position group. You're going to have to be healthy. We can't stress that enough. I admire that walk-on. I like him. He's a decent little player. But if we're really going into Alabama with a walk-on as our fourth option, that's problematic. You can't do that. When you recruit at a school like Florida State and you have access to the talent that Florida State has. So you got to have some of these other guys that we mentioned emerge. But on the whole, there's some real reasons to think that you could have a special unit here.
Absolutely. All right. So as far as the reserves go, I mean, look, if George Campbell can stay healthy, we'll agree to talk about him more. He clearly has some of the best physical ability on the team. He just cannot stay healthy, seemingly. Also, from what I've heard, the catching and the route running, not necessarily where you want it to be, and getting off press, et cetera. at this point in his career, probably because he's been hindered by injuries a lot. You got two freshmen I really like in DJ Matthews and Tamarion Terry. But how much can you depend on those guys? I don't know. Ingram, they got to stay healthy. They really do. I think this receiving core, that top three, what's a good number for you? And I'm putting you on the spot here. So what is a good receiving number for you for these guys combined? How many catches do you think for Florida State's offense to have a good year do these guys need to combine for?
Probably north of 150, I would think. I mean, you're going to need, I would say, somewhere between 45 to 60 catches from all three of them.
I think I'm kind of in the same ballpark there. Last year, your top receivers, Bobo had 30, Kermit had 34, so that's 64. And then 25 on that from Tate is 89. And then Murray had 27, so that's 116. And then Travis Rudolph, 56, so that's what, 172? Yeah. I mean, so that was your top five.
Did the math there, right?
That's live math, by the way, on the show. I think that was right. I think they need to be at least north of 140 catches in order for this offense to have a successful year, because otherwise you're dependent on some other dudes. Maybe, you know, if they get to 140, I feel like this will be a good year. Because that means, it just means you're getting the ball 140 times in the hands of guys who are playmakers or touchdown makers.
Yeah, it's true. It's also probably indicative that you had some good injury luck as well.
Correct.
Obviously, production will step up from the other side if somebody goes down, or at least the other two kids would have theoretically more balls thrown their way. But, if we look back and this group has north of 150 receptions, then that's probably good inclination that people were able to play, you know, the vast majority of games. So
Tight ends,
man. All right, so tight ends were interesting. I went back. We kind of rotate who listens to the previous year's preview to get an idea of just some perspective. But when I went back and listened to the tight ends part in last year, I found it to be pretty accurate. We actually took a clip from our 2015 tight end preview and dropped it in where you said, I know everybody's excited about the tight ends, but the off-season hype is a year early here. 2016 is the year that you should really begin to be significantly optimistic. And a lot of that was tied to one player in particular that people got overly excited by. But I think that was true for the most part. And I think we accurately identified that Izzo was a solid, fantastically solid player. And the fact that you hadn't had a fall off from, one of the more, I don't want to say he's one of the best tight ends, but he was certainly one of the most productive tight ends in the pass game that Florida State had ever had in O'Leary. Izzo has been, I don't know that you could really have asked more from Izzo from a standpoint of what he's given you so far through his career.
I think he's had a very good career. I mean, I think he's one of the better tight ends in the ACC. Now, he did not break out last year necessarily, but I think he had a very solid year. I mean, he blocked well for the most part, 19 catches, 227 yards, and no battles of injuries. But I think he's just on a good trajectory, man. Like, he's not going to be a superstar, I guess, but I think he can continue to improve. He's, what, a redshirt junior now? So, Ingram, it does feel like he's one of those guys who has been in this program forever.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does.
But he's got this year and next year left. Mm-hmm. I expect him to get better this year. I think his rapport with DeAndre Francois will continue to improve. I think he'll become a better blocker. I think he's just on that natural progression. And I do think he's a guy, by the way, who could get drafted at some point. Maybe not this year. I don't know if he's like an early leave guy. But, you know, hey, I think he's going to have a chance to get drafted and make an NFL roster. And I think he is one of the better players on this offense.
I think he's certainly one of the quantities that you think is the most known and that of which you can rely upon the most. So Maven Saunders, a guy that I kind of referenced a second ago, player that's always piqued people's interest, had a lot of excitement tied to him. Where do you think we sit kind of with the Maven Saunders experiment headed into 2017?
I don't think his development has been quite as linear as Izzo's has, right? Like, everybody is always like, hey, if they can develop him, if they can get him to where they want him to be. And physically, he has a whole lot of ability. For people who don't remember, he was a basketball player from the Bahamas, moved to moved to Texas, played at the Kincaid School there in Houston. Very new to the game of football. And I think it's fair to call him, you know, kind of still raw, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not a guy who's super dependable. He does make mental mistakes still, and is still sort of learning the game. You know, he's not as good of a player as Izzo is right now, and part of that's blocking, part of that's running routes, part of that's just kind of the feel for the game, and that's a risk that you take when you recruit a guy who's that, you know, that raw. Look, if you had a guy with Maven Saunders' athleticism and size who was already very good at football and understood football a whole lot, there's a term for that, and it's called five-star or unicorn, right? And they don't come along too often. So you take flyers as coaches. You take chances on these guys, kind of like lottery tickets. The chance you actually hit on them is not that great, but if you do, you have a really special player. So far, I would say they have not necessarily had a huge hit on him, but he's also not been a failure. He's not a bad player. He's just not a star yet. I'm not willing to project a breakout year for him at this point. I don't, like, at least the stuff I've heard, I don't know about you, because we haven't talked in a couple days. I don't know if he's been, nobody's told me, hey, Maven's been killing it at practice. Maven's really showing out. That's not been said.
Yeah. No, haven't heard that on my end either, so we'll see. I mean, I think it's just a guy that's kind of inched along, and I predict he'll have a better year, that they'll incorporate him into the offense in ways that we haven't seen. We've always talked about the want to run two tight ends, and we can circle back to that in a second. But the name that has emerged from camp, and I'm not saying this kid's going to be a starter or that he's going to, you know, catch two touchdowns against Alabama or something like that. But if you want to find a player from camp that does have buzz attached to him, it's Trey McKitty. I mean, we talked about him 2 or 3 weeks ago, and the positive remarks about what that kid's game could be haven't slowed down in any way, shape, or form.
Exactly right. Trey McKitty, true freshman, got in for spring, which was key, out of IMG Academy. A kid who really blew up physically before his senior year. I think Florida State fans are going to be very happy with him. In fact, I can report that he is already consistently taking Nasir Upshur's reps. So, mm-hmm. In my mind, he's past him. He is ahead of him on the depth chart, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, I don't know if, you know, if you're Upshur and you look ahead to 2018 and you see, you know, two redshirt seniors on the roster in Izzo and Saunders, and then you see McKitty, who's a year younger and you already pass you, you're going to hang around as a third-year player, fourth on the depth chart in 2018? I'm not. I'm transferring out, if that's me. In addition to the fact they also signed another tight end in Alexander Marshall, who I don't know how much he's going to play this year. But, yeah, Trey McKitty has been impressing at practice. He's been making some catches. In fact, he's also played a little bit with the ones in Maven's spot at times, mm-hmm. Right. Which yeah. Surprised me some, but that's the case. I asked around. So there's some good – hearing some good things there. And I wouldn't surprise me to see him, you know, maybe catch a handful of balls this year. That I'm not saying he's going to go out and catch 20 passes, but wouldn't shock me if he's kind of your wing in some of these two tight end packages.
So, Bud, kind of to this end, we've had some recent questions and submitted, and we always appreciate feedback. I will say, not to get us sidetracked, but I didn't realize that some people had been sending us messages on SoundCloud itself. I'd say that's about the only place that we just don't check. For every 9 messages, every 10 messages we get on that account, 9 of them spam. So if you've reached out to us via that method, just either hit us up on Twitter or shoot us an email, thenolcast@gmail.com. Didn't want to think that we've been ignoring people, but we had a recent question from Matt Gates. Will the thin wide receiver group lead to more two tight end passing sets with Saunders and Izzo? Which of the two line up, or which of the two could line up in the slot or spit out? And Congressman Gates, always appreciate your listenership to the Nolcast, and that is a very good question, and it's a timely one to drop into the preview
here. So, I think that is something that we are going to see. I think they will use two tight end sets. In addition, look, they also lost fullback Freddie Stevenson, who I know we'll discuss in the running back episode. But so you have not that Vickers is a bad player or that he's not been playing well, but I think that you have more veterans at the tight end spots. It could lend itself to using more two tight end packages, especially if you catch an injury or two at receiver. If those guys stay totally healthy, I don't know if the amount of tight end packages is going to change necessarily all that much. But if they don't, then yeah, I think you'll go to a lot of two tight end sets, and it may help you with running the ball. You know, we'll just have to see with that.
Best case scenario, Trey McKitty continues to progress at a rate that we feel comfortable getting him on the field sooner than later. Any chance you might see McKitty split out and see like a two, maybe even a three tight end formation where you make use of McKitty's flexibility?
Maybe, yeah, maybe on the goal line. So, man, think about how much bigger, like in the red zone, this team will be this year than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, my thought that you just brought up to me, okay, any chance we go three tight ends with Izzo, Saunders, and then maybe McKitty is kind of your third there on the goal line? It's possible, but my immediate thought was, well, which receiver are you taking off the field, Gavin or Tate? I want both those dudes there in the red zone, right? And Murray, to be honest, makes tough contested catches pretty well. So I like the potential of this group. It's just it's less proven than last year's was. What do you think a good over-under number is for tight end receptions this year and tight end yards? Last year they had 19 receptions and 410 yards.
So Izzo was the only one that caught balls last year?
No, Saunders caught 10 for 182.
So wouldn't they have had
29 catches and 409 yards, looks like.
As a whole, I would... You want to put the catches in the low 40s, maybe 41, somewhere in that area?
Yeah, I think if they get to 40, that'll be a pretty nice year for them. So, yeah, 40 and maybe 500 yards instead of 400?
Yeah, I think maybe 525, somewhere in that area.
I think that'd be a very nice year.
With 41 catches. I think that'd be a very... very nice year where you have a very defined and carved out role in the offense, and that's something to watch for, and I think that's pretty attainable, actually.
I think this was a good look at the position, man. If I'm coming away from this, I'm thinking, damn, the talent and the potential here is as good as it's been in a while. It's on the coaching staff, you know, Coach Dossie, Coach Brewster, Coach Fisher, to get these guys coached up and to utilize them in the way that best maximizes their skill set. And look, at game one, it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen like they're going to ball out, but I'm saying they're going to have the opportunity to do so game one. Ingram, I know we are running long here, but I'm okay with that for now. Think about all these teams that have beaten Alabama. All right, go through the Bama list, you know, of losses. I'm going to type this out right now. And it's going to be short. Just because we're going to have multiple Alabama preview episodes. Let's go through their recent losses, right? Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson had a few nice catches on them, didn't they?
Yeah, one or two.
Yeah.
One or two.
Freaks making big-time catches. 2015, who did Alabama lose to?
Ole Miss.
Ole Miss. Huh. Ole Miss seemed to have had a guy named Laquon Treadwell, who went early in the NFL and is a dude who... they threw the ball up to him. Wasn't super complicated, and he mossed Alabama's corners, making tough catches. 2014, who did Alabama lose to? Ole Miss, again, same deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Ohio State, which had, you know who was on that Ohio State team? Michael Thomas, Jordan, who's the other? They had a number of future NFL guys on that team making those catches against them. Mm-hmm. 2013. Who'd they lose to in 2013?
A&M?
No, they actually lost to Auburn.
Is that or no? 2012.
Yeah, A&M, and then they lost to Oklahoma, which had some pretty good dudes.
Yeah.
2012, they lost to Texas A&M. They had a guy named Mike Evans on that team, if I recall. He's pretty good.
He kind of fits the mold that we've described.
Yeah. Who'd they lose to in 2011?
Well, didn't A&M beat them twice in Tuscaloosa and then beat them in... College State?
No, A&M only got them once.
And then got their teeth kicked in the next
2011, yeah, they lost to LSU, which made a very famous contested catch right down there on the goal line to set up the decisive field goal.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah.
That 9-6 game. 2010, they lost three times. Obviously, probably contested catches in there. And then 2008, they lost. They lost to Utah, and oh, Florida. Florida had a couple dudes on that team. I think some dudes there. The point is, Nick Saban's defense, by design, challenges you to make one-on-one plays. Oh, yeah. The 2010 team lost to South Carolina, LSU, and Auburn. All of them had some dudes on their team.
Yeah. Some guy named Alshon Jeffrey,
South Carolina.
Stands out.
So
yeah.
The common thread here is big-bodied athletic dudes who are accepting the Bama challenge, which is make plays against our receiver or against our defensive backs one-on-one, oftentimes down the field. Most teams can't do it. If you can't do it, you lose. Unless you can get be the beneficiary of six turnovers, including two fumbled kickoffs, which is what I'll call an Ole Miss, essentially.
Right.
And then if Florida State gets six turnovers against Alabama and Bama fumbles two kickoffs deep in their own end zone, I will guarantee an FSU win. a little easier said than done. But you got to make big plays down the field, one-on-one, mano-a-mano. You got to buck up and do it if you want to win that game. I'm not saying Florida State is going to do that, but I do believe they are much more prepared to do that with this receiving core than last year's receiving core. Bama's defensive backs would have ate last year's receivers for breakfast. Easy. They face better guys on their second team as far as physical ability and the ability to make tough contested catches down the field than what FSU was running out there last year. So from that perspective, I'm excited. But my concern is, you know, on third and four, are the guys going to be in the right spots? Are they going to run the right routes? Are they going to pout if they're not getting the ball? You know, is there a leader in this group? Can Nyquan Murray act like an upperclassman and not an underclassman? You know, should the head coach have to be yelling at the quote unquote leader of the receiving core for his effort in practice? Like, effort should never be, you know, negotiable. That should be something that's there every day, especially as an upperclassman who's been in the system. I guess that's kind of the downside or the worry about this group, but we'll just have to see.
I think that's fair. I think that's a pretty comprehensive look as to what could be there, and I think that's a good blend of cautious concern and a decent amount of optimism as well as what we could see in 2017. So hope this has been a good look. I want to always thank our sponsors and the people that make this possible, Louisiana Hot Sauce and For the Table Restaurant Group, for allowing us to bring you another preview. And, Bud, I very much look forward to what we have in front of us.
Yeah, man, it's going to be good. And I promise the other episodes will be a little bit shorter so that everybody can consume them in a more timely fashion. We just love talking ball, man. And I feel like every time
when you combine the wide receivers and tight ends too, it's a little bit of a larger group than
most. That's fair. That's really fair. I just pulled up Alshon Jeffrey's game log. Yeah, he went 7 for a .127 and 2 touchdowns against Bama that day.
Well, and he had quite the performance against one Drake Kirkpatrick.
Yes,
it was dominant Saturday afternoon.
That guy
for Alshon
was good in big games, man. 5 for a .141 against Clemson. Against Auburn, 8 for a .92. Hell, even in that bowl game, 9 for a .130 against us.
Right.
All right, let's wrap this thing.
This concludes this episode of The Nullcast. Make sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts, write us at thenullcast@gmail.com, or tweet us at Nullcast. Today's date is August 23rd, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.